For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is July 20th. We are in Parashas Tetzaveh, page 460. Actually, we're going to go back to 464. We're going to start this evening, even though we read it before, we're going to start this evening from the beginning of Perek Chavches, chapter 28. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Ve'atah ha'krev elecha et Aaron achicha, and you, Moshe, you should bring close to you Aaron, your brother, ve'esbonav ito, and his sons with him, mitoch b'nei Yisrael, from within the b'nei Yisrael, v'chah ha'noli, to make him into a Kohen for me. Aharon, Nadav, v'avihu, Elazar, v'yisamar, b'nei Aaron. Aharon, Nadav, and Avihu, Elazar, and Yisamar, the sons of Aaron. So there's first a general statement. You should bring close Aaron and his sons, and then they are specified. You shall make sanctified clothing for Aaron, your brother, lechavod ulesifares, for honor and for glory. We talked about this extensively last time, this verse. And you shall speak to all of those who are wise of heart, that I have filled him with a spirit of wisdom, and he shall make, or they shall make, the clothing of Aaron, lekadesho, to sanctify him, lechahanoli, to make him into a Kohen for me. Ve'la begadim asher yasu, these are the clothing they shall make. Choshen ve'ephod u'me'il. Choshen is a breastplate, ephod is an apron, me'il is a jacket. Uchsones kashbeit, and a tunic, which is made of linen. Mitznefes, a hat, ve'avnet, and a belt. And they shall make sanctified clothing for Aaron, your brother, ulivanav, and for his sons, lechahanoli, to make him into a Kohen for me. And they, those who are wise of heart, those who have a wise spirit, shall take the gold and the blue wool and the purple wool, Vestalas Hashani, and the red wool, Vest Hashesh, and the linen. So let's make a few points over here, and we're going to discuss the clothing this evening. We'll discuss that in detail. So the Torah, we mentioned already that in this parsha, Moshe's name is not mentioned, and that's emphasized by the constant reference to Ve'ata and you, which is the way the parsha begins, and here in this paragraph it's mentioned twice more. In Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, and Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. It doesn't say Moshe, it says, and you. Moshe's name is omitted. So you shall bring close to you Aaron, your brother, and his sons, from within the Bnei Yisrael, to make him into a Kohen for me. Who are they? Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Yisamar, the sons of Aaron. In Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, you should speak to all those who are wise of heart, that I fill them with the wise spirit, and they shall make the clothes of Aaron to sanctify him, to make him into a Kohen for me. That's the second time it says in this paragraph, Lecha Hanoli, to make him into a Kohen for me. It says it in Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. It says it in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. And Pasuk Aleph, verse 4, lists the clothing. And at the end of that pasuk, at the end of that verse, it says, "Ve'asu v'gdei kodesh la'aron achicha." They shall make clothing, sanctified clothing for Aaron, your brother, ulevanav, and for his sons, lechahanomi, to make him into a kohen for me. So that phrase is said three times in this paragraph. Notice it does not say lechahanam li, to make them into kohanim for me. It constantly says lechahano li, to make him into a Kohen for me. Even when the Torah is referring to Aaron and his sons, It never says to make them into Kohanim for me. It says to make him, Aaron, into a Kohen for me. Now, Aaron had already been singled out to become the Kohen. This we already know from before. Aaron has always been along with Moshe. And we know that here Aaron is being officially making the clothing for him to make him into a Kohen for me. We talked about how the clothing themselves could make a Kohen, for example, going from a Kohen, a regular Kohen, to becoming a Kohen Gadol, to becoming the high priest. It is possible to do that through putting on the clothing. The clothing itself is a method of acquiring a certain degree of sanctification. So Aaron here is being designated as a Kohen through the clothing. But even when it is Aaron's sons that are being mentioned along with Aaron, it says to make him, Aaron, into a Kohen for me. That would therefore imply that Aaron's sons are not Kohanim in their own right. Why are Aaron's sons Kohanim?
Because
they're sons of Aaron. But it's not that they deserve to be Kohanim. It is Aaron who deserves to be a Kohen. And once Aaron deserves to be a Kohen, that special status is passed down in his line to his children, grandchildren, etc. up until today. But it is not the case that they deserve it themselves. We went through Parashas Terumah, where we also had those who are wise of spirit building the various utensils of the Mishkan and the Mishkan itself, the tabernacle itself, the structure and the utensils. And in that case, when they were charged with that mission of constructing the Mishkan, so the way the Torah says it is, first it says the famous Pasuk, going back to page 444, you don't have to go back, I'll read it to you. It says, "Va'asu li mikdash v'shalchanti v'socham," they shall make for me a sanctified place, and I will dwell amongst them. So you have a reference there to the people making it. And then it talks about all of the various utensils that they're going to make and the Mishkan itself, the tabernacle itself. And later on, we will have, when they actually do construct it, that it's going to be those who are wise of heart who are going to do it. But here, Moshe plays a very significant role in this process of making Aaron into a Kohen. Despite the omission of Moshe's name, notice in this paragraph how central Moshe is to this. Let's start in Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Ve'ata, and you, hakrev eilecha, bring close to you Aaron, your brother, and his sons from within the Bnei Yisrael to make him into a Kohen for me. Now, what does being close to Moshe have to do with becoming a Kohen? Is Moshe a Kohen?
No.
Moshe is not a Kohen. Moshe is a Levi. So, what do you mean, bring him close to you, that he should then become a Kohen? Further, in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, you shall speak to all of those who are wise of heart, that I filled them with a wise spirit, and they shall make clothing for Aaron to sanctify him, to make him a Kohen for me. What do you mean you shall speak to them? Of course Moshe is going to speak to them. The whole Torah is transmitted by Moshe. That doesn't need to be said over here. It almost seems that those who are wise of heart can only make the clothing for Aaron because Moshe is the one directing the traffic. Moshe is the one saying, okay, make these stitches. Put that garment together, put that material here. put that material over. So Moshe is the one directing the operation. We know that Moshe directs the operation. I don't mean to suggest that Moshe is not directing the operation with the construction of the Mishkan. Of course he is. But here the Torah is emphasizing that Moshe needs to tell them to do it. Speak to them. It seems that becoming a Kohen is something which is coming from Hashem through Moshe to Aaron with the conduit of the clothing. Through Moshe, the clothing gets put on Aaron and Aaron becomes the Kohen. Now I want to remind you of a very significant pasuk, a very significant verse that we had back in Parshas Shmos. If you hold the place here and turn back to the time when Hashem was trying to get Moshe to be the leader to take the Jews out of Egypt, and Moshe didn't want to do it. And he kept refusing and refusing and refusing. And finally Moshe said, Hashem, send with the one who you have always sent with. Rashi explains, Moshe's real resistance was because he did not want to usurp his brother Aaron, his older brother Aaron. If you turn back to page 308, on page 308, Pasuk Gimel, verse 13, towards the bottom, Moshe says, Vayomer bi Hashem, Moshe says, please God, Shlach na biyatishlach, send through whomever you will send. Don't send it through me. Don't make me the leader who's going to take them out. Let someone else do it. He means Aaron. Vayicharaf Hashem b'Moshe. Hashem became angry with Moshe. Vayomer, and he said, Halo Aaron achicha ha-Levi, Aaron, your brother, the Levi. Yodati, I know ki daber yadaber, who he will be willing to speak. V'gam hinehu yotzei krasecha, and also he is coming out to greet you. V'ra'acha, he will see you. V'samach b'libo, and he will be glad in his heart. He's not going to be jealous of your appointment. Just the opposite. He will be very happy to hear that you have risen to greatness. V'dibartoi, love, you shall speak to him, to Aaron. V'samtoes ha'devarim b'fiv, and you will put the words in his mouth. Meaning, whatever I tell you, you'll tell Aaron. V'anochi e'ayeh im picha v'im piu, I will be with your mouth and with his mouth. V'oreisi eschem eis asher ta'asun, and I will show you what to do. V'diberhu lecha el ha'am, he will speak on your behalf to the nation. V'ayahu yeh lecha lefeh, he will be for you as a mouth. V'atas yeh lo le'lohim, you will be for him as a leader. So you will be the one who's the leader, and you will tell Aaron the various instructions, and then Aaron will be the one to say everything to the people, say everything to Paro. Aaron will be the one to speak. So here we have Moshe who doesn't want to do it, and then Hashem finally tells him, okay, if you keep refusing, so Aaron will be the one to do it, but he will be your mouthpiece, but you're still going to be the one to take the Jews out of Egypt. The verse, Pasuk Yedala, verse 14, says that Hashem became angry with Moshe. There is a debate. What was the result of that anger? So Rashi tells us, I will read you part of the Rashi, even though I know, I'll read it to you. You don't have to follow along. If you can, you're welcome to. But Rashi tells us, Rashi says that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha says that normally when you find that Hashem becomes angry in the Torah, there is a consequence, a negative consequence. And here it doesn't seem like there is one. But that was Rav Yehoshua ben Karcha said that. Rav Yossi responded to Rav Yehoshua ben Karcha, and he said, no, here we find a consequence as well. Because the verse says, Halo Aaron achicha ha-Levi, Aaron, your brother, the Levi. So Rashi reads, Shehaya asid lios Levi, Aaron was supposed to only be a Levi. V'lo Kohen, he was not supposed to be a Kohen. And Hashem says to Moshe, I was going to have the kuhuna, the priesthood, come from you, from Moshe. Me'ata, from now, lo yeh kain, that will not be the case. Elohu yeh kohen, he will be the kohen, ve'ata levi, and you will be the levi. So the consequence of Moshe constantly refusing to take the mantle of leadership because he doesn't want to usurp his brother, the result of that is that Hashem says, fine, if you don't want to usurp your brother, I will take a position that I had meant to be for you, Moshe, and I will give it to your brother, to Aaron. it was supposed to be that Moshe would have been the transmitter of Torah and also become the Kohen. Instead, it's going to be Aaron. Not only that, but Rashi tells us as well that Hashem says to Moshe, you don't understand your brother Aaron. You think he's going to be jealous of you. That's not so. He's going to be happy when he sees you. On that, Rashi says that he will see you and be glad in his heart. Lo kishata sabur, not like you think. Sheyehi makbir alecha, that he will be upset with you. Shata ola legedula, that you have risen to greatness. Just the opposite, he's going to be happy. Says Rashi, umi sham zaka Aaron. From there, from the fact that Aaron was happy when Moshe became the leader, Aaron, because of that, merited le'edei hachoshen, for the testimony of the breastplate, hanasun al halev, that goes on the heart. Because he didn't become jealous. But the jealousy stems from the heart. It's a seat of emotion. A person is upset. How come he gets and I didn't get? How come I didn't get and he got? As a jealousy. Aaron was in control of his emotions. Aaron didn't feel that jealousy. Aaron was happy to see someone else, even his younger brother, become the leader. And as a result of that, Aaron deserves to wear the choshen, the breastplate, which goes on the heart. It's almost as if the Torah is saying, only Aaron has the ability to wear the choshen. Because the choshen's potency is derived from it being worn by someone who is not a jealous person. A jealous person puts on the choshen will not function properly. Aaron wears the choshen, it functions properly. Aaron is fit for the choshen is fit for Aaron. That's what Hashem tells Moshe. So we're making a switch over here. Moshe was supposed to be the Kohen Gadol. No, Aaron is not going to be the Kohen. Moshe is only going to be a Levi. So Moshe, of course, is the greatest Navi, the greatest prophet that ever lived. He is the transmitter of Torah. He's the greatest Talmud Chacham, the greatest sage who ever lived. That's Moshe. And we, of course, always understand that. But that's not a family business. Torah scholarship is not a family business. Anybody can do it. And there's no guarantee just because someone becomes a great Torah scholar that their children will be great Torah scholars. That's not a guarantee. Everybody needs to work at it on their own. It's not something you inherit from somebody else. The kahuna, the crown of priesthood, that is a family business. No one else can be the Kohen other than Aaron and his family. And the children become Kohanim simply because they were born into the family. They don't have to do anything to deserve it. And in fact, as we just read, it is Aaron who is acquiring the kahuna, not his sons. His sons only get it because they are his sons, not because they deserve it themselves. So here, it's not surprising that we find, back in Parashas Tetzav on page 464, it's not surprising that we find that Hashem is presenting the kahuna, the priesthood, as Moshe bringing Aaron close to Moshe, to him, and then Aaron becomes the Kohen. Because the truth is, the kahuna was supposed to be Moshe's. So it's almost as if Hashem is telling Moshe, okay, now is the time that you're going to take the gift that I was going to give you, you're going to hand it off to your brother. You're going to give it to your brother right here. This is where it's going to happen. The truth is, though, that we are going to find later on that when the ceremony takes place for the Mishkan to be inaugurated, in Parashas Terumah that we just read about, that was the instructions to build the Mishkan. Parashas Tetzaveh is the instructions to make the clothing for Aaron. But both in Terumah and Tetzaveh are not where it actually takes place. They're actually going to construct it and make the clothing later on in Parashios, Vayakel, and Pekudei. And then, even after they construct the Mishkan and make the clothing, they're not actually going to inaugurate the Mishkan until a few months later. And that's going to be described in Parashas Tzav and Shemini. Parashas Tzav and Shemini in Sefer Vayikra, which we're going to get to later, Mitzvah Hashem, that there they will actually go through the ceremony of making Aaron and his sons the Kohanim. That ceremony will take a week long. It's going to be a week that they are going to be bringing various sacrifices, doing certain things in order to become Kohanim. The inauguration of the Mishkan and the inauguration of Aaron and his sons take place simultaneously. And that's what's going to happen. The Gemara tells us who ran the show as long as there was the inauguration process for the inaugural process for Aaron. Aaron couldn't run the show. He was becoming a Kohen. So who ran the show? And the Gemara tells us Moshe ran the show. Moshe actually acted like a Kohen for that week, which is a funny thing. Think about it for a second. There is no Kohen. We have to inaugurate someone as a Kohen. So Moshe will act as a Kohen. Who inaugurated Moshe? Well, I'm saying there was no process to inaugurate him. So that was the default. Because the whole default was that Moshe would be the Kohen. So Moshe does act in the default position of Kohen as for the week-long process of inaugurating Aaron. So you see again that it flows through Moshe. The kahuna flows through Moshe to Aaron. It would therefore seem to be that if you really want to plot the process of kahuna, which we know goes all the way back to Aaron, it really goes back to Aaron, and then it takes a turn to Moshe. Moshe is really the source of it from Hashem. It goes from Hashem to Moshe, over to Aaron, and then Aaron's line all the way down.
Rabbi, with all that Moshe has to do, I can understand why there's a certain amount that an individual is able to control the situation.
Yes, yes. So here, we talked about this concept way, way back when we talked about Shem ben Noach. We talked about Noach's son Shem. We talked about this, but we're going to emphasize it one more time now. And that is that we know that there are Shlosha Ksarim Heim. There are three crowns. There are three crowns. What are the three crowns? Torah, Avoda, which is Kuhuna. So we'll call it Kuhuna. And Malchus, which is royalty. Okay. Kuhuna is Aaron. He's the Kuhuna. Who's the royalty?
David.
Who's Torah? So, Torah is not a family business. Torah could be anybody. In the time of Moshe, the crown of Torah was worn by Moshe. The crown of Torah can be worn by anybody who becomes a Torah sage. And it's open to everybody to try to wear it. It takes a lot of work. It's not easy. And it's a lifetime of effort. But a person could become the person who wears the crown of Torah. Can the same person wear the crown of Kohuna and the crown of royalty?
No.
They are forever separated because Aaron is one line, David is another line. They are from different tribes. Aaron is a Levi, David is from Yehuda. So, therefore, these two can never mix. They are separated. One can never take over for the other. And we've had situations in history where there was an attempt either for a Kohen to try to be the king or for a king to try to be the Kohen. And in each case that has happened, there have been significant consequences which happened almost immediately and they were decimating. They were terrible consequences. We have the example of Uzziyahu, who was a king, who attempted to try to be a Kohen. And when that happened, he was afflicted with tzara'as. Immediately, he got tzara'as. He got the skin disease on his forehead where everybody could see it, which essentially quarantined him for the rest of his life. He was never able to act as king. When that happened, his son took over as the acting king because he could no longer function as king because he had to be quarantined. The person who has tzara'as is now sent out of the camp. So he lost the ability to act as king when he attempted to usurp the kahuna, the place of Aaron. When the Hashmonaim, the Maccabees, the great heroes of the Hanukkah story, a few generations later, as the leaders of the Jewish people attempted to actually crown themselves as king, Hashem brought about circumstances that the entire family was killed out. The great heroes of the Hanukkah story, no one today can claim that they are a descendant of those great heroes because they were wiped out. Why? Because they attempted to take the royalty for themselves. These two families, these two lines are separated. But the line of Torah can go to anybody. And sometimes you can have the same person wear two crowns. The same person could wear the Kohen crown and the Torah crown. The same person could wear the royalty crown and the Torah crown. What's an example of a person who wore both the royalty crown and the Torah crown in the same time? He was both the king and the greatest sage of his generation. David was not only the king, he was also the greatest Torah scholar of his generation, and he wore both crowns simultaneously. Now, the Torah crown is not something you actually put on your head. The king does have a crown he puts on his head, but it means that he was recognized as the person who, through whom the transmission of Torah went. It went through David, and he wasn't the only king who had that distinction of being not only the king, but also the greatest Torah scholar of his generation.
More so than King Solomon?
Yeah, more so than King Solomon, yeah. More so. What about the Kohuna? Do we have an example of where the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, was also the greatest Torah scholar of his generation? So we have a man named Yehoyada Kohen Gadol. Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol, who lived in the middle of the era of the first temple. Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol, he was the high priest. He also was the greatest Torah scholar of his generation, wearing both crowns simultaneously. So you can have people who wear two of the crowns, but no one can wear all three. They have been divided up. These two cannot come together. They've been divided up. We do have, though, individuals prior to this division who wore all three crowns. We talked about this with Shem, the son of Noach, who wore all three crowns. Shem, the Torah tells us, has another name back in Parshas Lech Lecha, Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek was Melech Shalem. He was the king of Yerushalayim. He was a king, was Shem. Shem was also, the pasuk over there says, V'hu Kohen L'Kel Elyon. He was a Kohen. Shem was a king and a Kohen, and Shem was the head of the yeshiva that Yaakov, that our ancestor Yaakov learned in the Shem Be'Eber. So Shem wore all three crowns. That's before it was divided later in history. But Shem wore all three crowns. The other person in history who wore all three crowns is Moshe. Because Moshe is the acting king of the Jewish people. In several places he's referred to as Melech. In Parashas Vahaloscha, for example, we have that Hashem commands the Jewish people to make trumpets, chatzotzros, to sound for Moshe. And Rashi says, why? Because it says in the verse, Vayehi Bishurun Melech, because there is in Yeshurun, in the Jewish people, there is Melech, there's a king. Who's the king? Moshe. Moshe was the acting king. It says before the line of David started. Moshe was the acting king. Moshe, of course, was the transmitter of Torah. And Moshe did act as the Kohen for that week-long inaugural process of Aaron becoming the Kohen. So Moshe does, at a certain point, wear all three crowns. Shem did it, Moshe did it, but after that, it gets divided and it can no longer happen again. From here on in, it is separated. Aaron is the line of Kohuna, David is the line of Malchus, of royalty. They cannot cross over.
So Shem was a Kohen. Noah was a Kohen?
It doesn't say that he was. It says that Shem was.
I'm wondering that the other two.
What does it mean that Shem was a Kohen? I don't know.
Okay.
How did he become a Kohen? I don't know. That I don't know. But the Torah says it. Yes.
Acted as if.
What's that?
He acted as if.
I don't know. I don't know what it means. Now, just as a interesting remez, an interesting hint to this concept of Shem and Moshe being the ones who wore all three crowns. The way the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in Ethics of the Fathers, the way that it says this idea, it says, Shlosha Ksarim Heim, there are three crowns. The Keser is a crown. Shlosha Kisarim Heim, there are three crowns. Keser Torah, the crown of Torah. Keser Kahuna, the crown of priesthood. Keser Malchus, the crown of royalty. That's what the Mishnah says. The last line of the Mishnah is, there's a fourth crown. That's even better. That is? Okay. It says, what's that? A good name. The crown of a good name, the crown of a good name is Ova al Gabehem, is greater than all of the crowns. So it says it's a, what, it's the crown of a good name. What is the Hebrew for a good name? The Keser, the crown of, let me put that in English. It's the crown of Shem Tov, a good name. A good name. Shem Tov. So, as a remez, as a hint in this Mishnah, it says Shem. You have three crowns. Shem is above all of them. And Moshe has another name.
Tov.
Vayetera Soki Tovu. The verse says about Moshe that his mother saw he was Tov. That's Moshe's other name. And so there is a hint in the Mishnah that these two people wore all three crowns, were above all three crowns. So here it is not surprising that as Hashem is describing what is going to happen here with the clothing to inaugurate Aaron as the Kohen, it runs through Moshe. Moshe has to bring Aaron close to him. Moshe has to tell the wise people that they need to make the clothing. It goes through Moshe. The clothing that were made, there were eight articles of clothing worn by the Kohen Gadol, and four articles of clothing worn by the Kohen Hedor, by the other Kohanim. The Torah here lists six of the eight. Pasuk Daled, verse 4. Says, these are the clothing that they shall make. Now, we're talking about Aaron. And it says, the clothing that you shall make for Aaron are the breastplate, the apron, the jacket. Those three were only worn by Aaron. They were not worn by the other Kohanim. Then it says, a tunic made of linen. That was worn by all the Kohanim. A hat, which was worn by all the Kohanim, and a belt, which was worn by all the Kohanim. So we have three articles of clothing that were only for Aaron, and three articles of clothing that was for everybody. The Torah here leaves out two articles of clothing, one that was only for Aaron, and one that was for everybody. What's the article of clothing that's been left out for Aaron only? The tzitz, the band that went across the forehead. That is not mentioned over here. We will have to discuss why it wasn't mentioned over here. And the article of clothing that everybody wore that has been left out over here is?
Mechmasayim,
the pants. That's been left out over here. That is mentioned later on. Again, we'll have to discuss why that was omitted over here. But these six articles of clothing are mentioned. Each article of clothing is going to get its own paragraph, its own discussion, for how it was constructed, all of the minute detail for what it looked like and how it was done. We, please God, will go through each of the articles of clothing. When we return after our extended break, we'll go through each of them. That's going to be the rest. That's going to be the balance of the parasha as we go through each of the articles of clothing. Each article of clothing not only was made in a very specific way, but, not surprisingly, it has its own symbolisms, its own significance, and it will also atone for various sins and correspond to various mitzvos. So we will discuss all of that, please God, when we return, going through each of the articles of clothing. But There is a general point which we should deal with right now, which will probably take the balance of this class, and that is that the clothing was made, here it mentions, five materials. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. They shall take the gold, the blue wool, the purple wool, the red wool, and the linen. Five types of materials to make the clothing. Now, there were other pieces. There were stones that were used as well in the clothing. But this is the main material. The materials that were made into threads were gold, three types of wool, and linen. Gold, we will see later how they made the gold into threads. The truth is today, when we all are familiar with aluminum foil, we can imagine having little tiny threads of gold. But we'll discuss that, please God, when we get to it. We had before, in the tapestry of the Mishkan, we had wool and linen spun together for the tapestry. But that was not a problem because no one wore the tapestry. That's just a curtain. Here we're talking about clothing. And the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, not all the clothing, but some of the clothing, particularly the chosh and the breastplate and the ephod, the apron, those two most certainly had wool and linen together. That's for sure. Whether the belt did or didn't is a discussion. Whether the regular Kohanim also had wool and linen together is a discussion. Certainly the Kohen Gadol had wool and linen together. We know that that is normally prohibited under the mitzvah of shatnez. Shatnez is that we are prohibited. We are not allowed to wear wool and linen together. Now when the Torah tells us not to wear wool and linen together, it is referring to making a garment out of wool and linen threads. Here, it's even more than that. The threads themselves had wool and linen in them. The Gemara discusses that the way this was done, the way the threads were made, is that they took six strands of blue wool, six strands of purple wool, six strands of red wool, and six strands of linen. I'm making a mistake here in a certain thing. They spun them together with the gold. And the gold as well. I'm making a slight error. I just don't remember exactly how it goes. But they were spun together into one thread. Each thread had
cord.
Each cord, it had all these threads spun together into it. And then they made these articles of clothing. And they were worn by the Kohen Gadol and possibly by the regular Kohanim as well. So here we have a situation where the Torah is explicitly saying to do something that is normally prohibited. Now that's okay. We have other situations where the Torah says to do something that's explicitly prohibited. For example, we know that one of the incestual relationships that's prohibited in the Torah is that a man is not allowed to marry his brother's wife. Even if his brother passes away or divorces his wife, his sister-in-law, he is prohibited to marry his sister-in-law. However, if his brother dies without children, then there's a mitzvah for him to marry his sister-in-law in the levirate marriage, the yibum. So here you have an example where something is prohibited, but under certain circumstances, not only is it permitted, it is a mitzvah to do so. So that's not unusual to find that the Torah will generally prohibit something, but under very specific circumstances, it will become a mitzvah to do so. Another example of that would be, which we do today, is that one of the prohibitions of Shabbos is that we're not allowed to make a wound. We're not allowed to cut something, cut something from a live animal or from a live person. For example, you can't cut your hair on Shabbos, can't cut your nails on Shabbos, and you certainly can't make a wound that draws blood on Shabbos that you're not allowed to do. Yet, if a baby is born on Shabbos, and the eighth day, a baby boy is born on Shabbos, the eighth day is Shabbos, we are required to perform the bris on Shabbos, which is normally prohibited, to make some sort of an incision like that. And yet there it's required. So it's not unusual that the Torah will say, normally it's prohibited, but under some very specific circumstances, it's either permitted or required. That we find. That's not so unusual. Here, though, what we have to deal with is that the mitzvah of not wearing wool and linen is something which is a chok, which means it's a mitzvah that doesn't have a reason that we understand. What's wrong with mixing milk and milk meat? We're going to get to that actually. With mixing linen and wool. In fact, there's nothing wrong with mixing it if you don't wear it. You can make things out of wool and linen together if you don't put it on. But if you're going to wear it, that's a problem. So what's wrong with it? Why is that a problem? Here, the difference between what I told you before, those things like Yibum, the lever at marriage, and Mila on Shabbos, doing a bris on Shabbos, is that we understand that the mitzvah of circumcision is to make an incision. And if it has to be done on the eighth day, and that eighth day comes out on Shabbos, okay, you have a conflict. Should we do the mitzvah of Mila, of bris, or should we do the mitzvah of Shabbos? There's a conflict. The Torah says, well, in this case, bris will override Shabbos. Okay, we understand. Similarly, with the lever in marriage, there the Torah specifically wants the brother to marry the sister-in-law. Here, it appears, of course this is not true, but it appears to be almost happenstance. Why should the Torah specifically require that the clothing of the Kohanim have wool and linen in them? Hashem could have just as easily said to make clothing that doesn't have wool and linen in them. Why would He have made it that the clothing specifically does have wool and linen, which therefore requires that we have a dispensation over here that the normal prohibition against wearing wool and linen together is waived? Why did He do that? It seems that it is not just okay that they have wool and linen together, but that Hashem wants them to be wearing wool and linen together. That's what we have to understand. Why would Hashem want that the Kohanim wear wool and linen together? Now, before we take a stab at that, just one thing first. Besides, I already gave one of them away. What are the other cases where you can't have two things that are normally by themselves are perfectly acceptable, but you can't put them together? Okay, milk and meat is the classic case. So we have wool and linen. We have wool and linen. And we have milk and meat. What else do we have? Okay, two animals, two different species that are under one yoke together, pulling on one yoke together. The Torah says that as a bull and a donkey. Really, it's any two species, but we'll put that down as a bull and a donkey. That as in with a yoke. That's all right.
Y-O-K.
I spelled the yoke of an egg. Okay. Right. So that's one case. What other cases, though, do we also have that you can't put animals together?
Chewing the
cud. Okay. Crossbreeding. Crossbreeding. You can't crossbreed either. So we'll call that a horse and a donkey. Now let it do that. So that you can't do either. Can't put the two of them together. Crossbreeding. What's that? Okay, grafting. Plants. You can't crossbreed plants. You can't put them together. We'll say grapes. And barley, for example. So you can't put that together either. So there's a lot of things the Torah says you can't put together.
The plant's equivalent of the yolk animals would be seeding a field with two different kinds.
Yeah, that's really the case. Then there's the
grapes and barley is not the same as grass. I mean, grafting.
Yeah, grafting is like grafting would be let's say apples, and we're in Georgia, so we'll say peaches. Okay. So you have a lot of things that you're not allowed to put together. We can't do it. We got to keep them separated, even though we don't understand why. Meaning that it's not so easy to understand why. Now, you could argue that perhaps you could say, well, you know, Hashem created horses and he created donkeys. He didn't create mules, and we shouldn't go ahead and create it. That's a little bit of a weak argument, because normally we're allowed to build on what Hashem created. That's perfectly fine. Hashem created trees, and Hashem created stones. We can make buildings. Nothing wrong with that, right? Aren't we putting together stones and wood and mortar, and we're making a building out of it? Nothing wrong with that. Perfectly fine. So we're not arguing over there, well, Hashem didn't create buildings, so we can't make buildings. It's nothing wrong with it. It's perfectly fine. So it's a little bit difficult to argue that because Hashem didn't make it, therefore we can't do it. Why can't we do it? Because the Torah said don't do it. That's why we can't do it. So we have a lot of things the Torah said don't do, and with all of these examples, there's never an exception. There's no exception where you can eat milk and meat, and there's no exception where you can have a bull and a donkey pulling together, or crossbreeding. There's no exceptions to that. Can't do it. But wool and linen, we have an exception, and that's over here. Why does the Torah want to make an exception?
You know, Rabbi, today, if you go to buy food, you have no idea. It's hybrids of that. I mean, how do you know that?
Okay, so there are different prohibitions. These prohibitions that we're mentioning over here,
yes.
Some of them, the prohibition is broader than others. So milk and meat is the broadest of all prohibitions, right? Milk and meat, not only can we not mix it, we can't even cook it. And we can't eat it. We can't derive benefit from it. It's very, very broad.
Yeah.
Right? That's milk and meat. But when it comes to, for example, grafting we're not allowed to do, but if it was done, we can eat it. Not only can we eat it, we could even plant a nectarine seed. We're allowed to do that. And once it was grafted, we're allowed to derive benefit from it. So some of them are narrower, and some of them are broader. So that's why with a mule also, once a mule is born, we're allowed to use a mule, but we're not allowed to crossbreed the animals in the first place. Yeah.
Talking the Kohen Gadol, which is already a separation. So I don't think, how can you compare it to anything else?
Okay, so Doreen is suggesting that let's not focus on specifically wool and linen versus the other ones. Let's just talk about who's the one who's going to be wearing the wool and linen.
Right.
So evidently, in the context of the kahuna, particularly the Kohen Gadol, but really all of the priesthood, it is, for some reason, okay, or not even okay, it's required that they put wool and linen together. So, let's continue in that vein, because it's going to be very difficult for us to separate out why wool and linen is the thing that is being permitted over here. But let's continue along those lines with why should it be that particularly for the Kohen, we want to mix wool and linen? Okay, so hold that thought. Yeah.
Now, when it comes to clothing, wool is the highest expression of what the animal world has to offer us. And, you know, it could be looked at the other way around.
Okay, so you're suggesting that the truth is that it's important that the clothing of the Kohen Gadol show the mastery that the Kohen Gadol, the one who is representing the service of God, that's what he's representing, that he should have mastery over all of the physical world, so the mineral world, the animal world, and the plant world. And you are suggesting that it could be that the prohibition against us wearing wool and linen together is actually a way of drawing a distinction between us and him. Not so much because there's a problem putting the wool and linen together inherently, but rather it is to show that we are not the Kohen Gadol. Okay, that's nice.
And the reason is the grapes and the barley, that is also the same thing. You cannot mix the fruit.
That is true. That is true. It seems that grapes are given a status all their own, and that you're not supposed to mix things with grapes. The prohibition against mixing seeds is more stringent with grapes than with any other ones. With all other, for example, all other seeds could be mixed if you're not in Israel, except for grape seeds. In Israel, it extends to other seeds as well. But outside of Israel, it only is grape seeds that can't be mixed with others.
Mix all vegetables except the fruit.
Except for the grapes, only grapes. Okay. Grape seeds can't be mixed with other seeds.
Well, grapes have such a different meaning for us. I mean,
yes. Yeah. Okay, so I'll repeat it. So Mrs. Bleich is saying that we find that all the way back with Cain and Hevel, with Cain and Abel, all the way back there, their dispute arose because they each brought sacrifices, or I should say offerings, to Hashem. And Cain's was rejected and Hevel's was accepted. Hevel's offering was?
Sheep.
And Cain's offering was? Well, it was some sort of a plant. The Gemara tells us it was linen. So he offered linen and Hevel offered sheep, which is wool. So they were each offering the best of the particular item that they had, although Cain, he didn't offer the best growing thing, but perhaps the best when it comes to for clothing. Anyway, so they each offered that. The mixing of wool and linen, or the, I should say, the separation of wool and linen, seems to reflect back on that incident, which would not be surprising. That incident being as global as it was, so a murder, and all the way back in the beginning of the world. So it's that reverberates through the generations. Whenever it is, and I'm sure it does have to do with that, wool and linen being separated is still a very, very difficult thing to understand, and it's still something which we're only going to have a very limited ability to grasp. We know we can't do it. The Kohen Gadol does it. So it would seem, therefore, that you have to approach this in one of two ways. Either, we'll say either Dr. Faraday's way or one other way. Either we have to say, it would seem, that the pristine state would be that wool and linen be combined. That's what Dr. Faraday is suggesting. Really, they should be combined. But since the Kohen Gadol does that, everybody else can't do it, because we're not on the level of the Kohen Gadol. Only he is able to combine them, because he's the only one who can do it in the best way possible. The other way to look at it is that which is not that different, is that for some reason the combination of wool and linen is destructive. How is it destructive? Can't tell you, because I don't know. I don't understand it in the first place. But somehow it is a destructive force that is created when you combine wool and linen and wear it. But the Kohen Gadol, because of who he is, negates that destructive force. And therefore, for him, it's not destructive. And the wearing of the wool and linen is to emphasize the fact that the Kohen Gadol negates destructive forces. It could be they're both true. That when anybody else wears wool and linen together, it is destructive. The Kohen Gadol wearing woolen together is constructive, because he is on his level, what he represents, with the pure heart that Aaron has, with no jealousy, etc., that you have that ability to put them together. It is not coincidental that the first incident that we have of wool and linen that Mrs. Blanche brought up, going back to Cain and Hevel, and the first murder was the result of jealousy. That was the result of jealousy. Cain was jealous of Hevel. The fact that Hevel's offering was accepted and his was not. And that jealously led to murder. Aaron, who has more of a right to be jealous than anybody else, because he was the messenger of God before Moshe came on the scene, he was 3 years older than Moshe. He had every right to say, "What happened to me? What am I? Chopped liver?" Right? And instead, what is Aaron? Aaron is genuinely happy for his brother. Aaron is genuinely excited that his brother has become the great Moshe Rabbeinu. Aaron doesn't have a shred of jealousy in him.
Remember, that didn't happen at that moment. It couldn't have happened at that moment. It's not that when Aaron was 83 years old and Moshe was 80 years old, at that moment, Aaron decided, you know what, I won't be jealous. Clearly, this was a lifetime of work that Aaron had put in to become a person that wouldn't be jealous. He didn't know his brother was going to become greater than he was. He didn't know it was going to happen. But Aaron was a person who worked on the character trait of not being jealous. And then when he was faced with the ultimate challenge of his brother usurping him, it was no challenge. Because for Aaron, it's fine. He's great. I'm happy. Aaron puts the wool and linen together. Aaron isn't beset by the jealousy of Cain. Aaron is able to put the two together. It's very likely that there is a relationship between those things. Yeah.
So, which came first? The mitzvah of not wearing linen and wool together, or these instructions for the Kohen Gadol to wear garments made with those?
We can only comment about what came first in the way the Torah presents it to us. That doesn't mean that it actually came first, because the whole Torah was given at Har Sinai. So it would have all been given together. So I can't tell you which actually came first. But in the Torah itself, we are not presented with the mitzvah of Shanes, I believe, until later. I'm just looking back in Mishpatim. I don't think that we had the mitzvah of Shanes in Mishpatim. I think you are correct that we don't have it until later, until Barashas Kedoshim.
So after this?
Yeah. In the Torah, in the order of the Torah itself.
Right. So if this came first, then there was no prohibition for wool.
No, that's what I'm saying. When the Torah was given, the prohibition would have been given at that moment.
Oh.
It's just that it wasn't told. We don't have it written in the text yet until later on. So we're not introduced to it until later, but that doesn't mean it wasn't given earlier. Thank you all very much. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.